Crazy Stuff Shinpei. So the subtitle on the discussion here is, from where does all this non-compliance emanate? If you think about it, a lot of things go wrong. If you think, a lot of things go wrong in the Parsha, right? I mean, look at the list over here. The truth is, you probably could find more, but it says, Kodesh Baruch Hu says that the trees should come out, right, with the same taste, really, Rashi is Medayik, as the fruit themselves. They don't do it. They don't do it. So that's the number one. And we've talked about this before, but I think the Or HaChaim, I think, really, puts a very interesting look on it. Then you've got the moon, right? Oh, then we go. Then of course we've got the moon, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu says, you know, there should be two great lights, and the moon says, all right, you can't have two kings using one crown, right? And says, fine, okay, make yourself smaller. And the moon is smaller, and then in order to appease the moon, Hashem gives it the stars. Like, if you did something wrong, why do you need to appease it, right? Etc. Okay, that's what's going on. Then there is the sin itself of Adam, right? Before we got a boo there, unfortunately, there's the sin of Adam himself. And it appears from the surface, and this is the question that everybody asked, the Monavuchim asked the question, it seems like he's awarded. Beforehand, he didn't have the das, he didn't have the understanding to know that he was naked. And now all of a sudden, now he has the knowledge that he's unclothed. So it seems like he's being rewarded. You're getting greater understanding, more perceptiveness, etc., more sensitivity as a result of his sin. What's going on? Then we've got, in addition,
How is Adam rewarded?
Well, he says beforehand he didn't know, and now he does know. So it sounds like knowledge you always assume is a good thing. So, you know, what's the story? All of a sudden, he does something wrong, and now he has more knowledge than he had before. Like, what was he supposed to be before? Mr. Ed? And then, we've got the story of Cain and Hevel. Cain and Hevel, and what transpired over there, and it's an interesting story in that it seems, if you look at the Pesukim, it seems that Cain was the first one to initiate the idea of bringing a korban. So he took the initiative. He did a sloppy job, and in turn, Hashem didn't accept his korban. Hevel, right, is an imitator. He imitates Cain. It appears he's coming second. His korban is accepted, and in the end, Cain winds up killing Hevel. And just the idea that if Cain wanted to bring a korban, like, why bring the junkiest stuff? Why bring the junkiest stuff?
Didn't he get some credit?
Yeah, I guess he gets some credit for bringing. But what's the idea? If you're spontaneously going to bring a korban, so why bring junk? bring something good. Now you bring something good. Then you've got, in addition...
What, a third page
now? Okay, let's stay calm. Then in addition, you've got the... you've got what took place in the door of Enosh. In other words, after Cain killed Hevel, right? And that meant that essentially Cain's seed is doomed, right? Because then they eventually were wiped out by the flood. So Adam once again has a union with Chava, and is born Chase, right? Chase, and right Seth, and from Chase comes Enosh, and Enosh says Az Huchal Likro B'Shem Hashem. Then all of a sudden they start to call the name of God, and we call Mepharshim tell us that was the beginning of Avodah Zarah. How'd they get messed up? And then
what was Zorah after that?
They started worshiping Avodah Zarah. Started worshiping Avodah Zarah. And everybody called. We'll see that.
Yeah. Like how many people were around at this time?
I don't know. I'm not familiar with the total census. But it sounds like that must have been people, I mean, what do you call them? Must have been the, you know, the families of Cain. I mean, and I guess, I don't know, I mean, you know, there's, you only know the most hush of people.
Enosh had a couple of wives.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Enosh?
Lemech
had several wives, yeah. And then you've got the story with the Nephilim, the ones, the fallen ones, at the end of the Parsha. And according to some of the Parsha, we're talking about angels. Right? These Nephilim, they would call it Nephilim, Hayu Ba'aretz, Vayam Mehem, Vigam Achre Chena, Shayavo, Bnei Elokim, El Benoth, the Adam, Vyoldu, Lehem, Hema, Gibor, Meshem, Olam, Anshe Hashem. So it sounds like there are angels who somehow got messed up. Now, how does an angel get messed up?
The Nephilim were?
Well, according to one opinion, the Nephilim were angels who were, what do you call it, who got involved with women down here on the earth. And it's like, you know, huh, how'd that happen? How does an angel? I mean, first of all, we know that the idea of an angel is that
they were demons or something.
Well, these were what you call these to start off were angels. They were angels, and so how do they want to have it? The idea he doesn't have a Yetzirah of that nature. Right? How does the hell happen? And what was the Torah teaching us with all of this? So let's take a look. Again, I'll synopsize because to read it all inside is really a lot. I agree. Let's just synopsize. The pasuk says, look on page 1. Vayomer Elokim, Tachi Aretz Desha, Esav Mazria Zera, Eitz Pri Oseh Pri Lemino. On page 1, the first citation. You know, the subtitle there is, you can't see the forest for the trees. Cheche, as we say in Hebrew. Cheche. It's like, that's a bad joke. That's a bad, you can't see the forest for the trees. We're talking about the trees producing the wrong, never mind. You have to be there. Vayomer Elokim tachea eretz deshe, esev mazria zera, eitz pri osa pri lemino, asher zaro bo, ala oretz vahi chen. Vatos eretz deshe, esev mazria zera lemineo, v'eitz osa pri asher zaro bo lemineo, v'yar Elokim ki tov. Fine. So what happened over here? Eitz pri, Rashi says, shehei tam ha-eitz ketam ha-pri, v'hi lo osa kein. Right? She didn't do what she was told to do. In other words, the earth was supposed to produce trees where the bark, where the tree itself tasted like the fruit. Yeah, v'hi lo asas akein el vatotzei aretz ve'etos apri v'lo etz pri levir kishniskala adam alavono nifkada gamhi alavona miniskala. So Rashi says the earth was commanded to produce, to give forth trees where the tree itself tasted like the fruit. Instead, it gave forth trees that did not taste like the fruit, except for perhaps a select group, right? Right? I.e. the Eitz Hadas. The Eitz Hadas, right? The tree tasted like the fruit, right? And perhaps also pilpulin, right? Etc. The tree tasted like the fruit. But all the other ones, the tree did not taste like the fruit. And because she didn't do what she was supposed to do, so therefore when Adam was cursed after eating from the Yetz Hadas, so then the earth was also cursed along with him. That it should be less productive. Right? Etc.
Why? Because they were partially responsible?
Right. Oh, so that's what it appears. It appears as partially responsible. But doesn't Rashi doesn't really explain. Also says the Orach Chaim HaKadosh. Ve'elzeabit. Eich timur aretz, baroka aretz. He says, I got one question. How does the earth rebel against the one who made the earth? First of all, the earth has no Yetzihara. The domain, right, the world of the mineral, the most that Chazal say that it has a Yetzihara is an animal. Right? Because an animal, it has to be able to, has to have a Yetzihara, right? It really caught. We see that it damages, right? And in order to be able to propagate, it needs some sort of drive inside of it. Right? So therefore, animals have a Yetzara. That's what Chazal teach us. But, right? Not the same as ours, but it has a Yetzara, nonetheless. Yeah? But the flowering kingdom doesn't have one. It's certainly not the, what do you call it, the mineral kingdom doesn't have a Yetzara. So how can it rebel against, what do you call, against the Kodesh Baruch Hu? Yeah? Achein Perusham Sheldvaram Hu. Ki'arz diktiko b'chokhmas Hashem asher yosad b'adichsif Hashem b'chokhma yosad aretz. Really what the earth did was, it wasn't going to rebel against Hashem, but it was imbued with chokhma. Hashem founded the land on chokhma. And the earth was unfortunately was overly zealous in trying to show its chokhma. I.e., when Hashem said to create the, what he called to produce trees, whose bark and fruits taste the same, the earth said, well, there are a lot of ways to interpret the pasuk, right? Again, I don't want to go into all the diukim of the Or HaChaim, but the earth felt there were several ways you could understand the pasuk, right? Even though it understood l'chor the pashit pshat was to produce trees whose bark and fruit was the same. He says, but you can understand it this way, or you can understand it that way, you can understand it the third way. So what it wound up doing is it produced three different types of trees. It produced trees, right, where there were no fruit at all. It produced trees, right, where the bark did not have the taste of the fruit, but the fruit obviously had the taste of the fruit, and it produced trees, yeah, where the bark and the fruit tasted the same.
So what was the second one again? The bark just had the taste and no fruit.
No, what do you call it? The first type is no flavor to bark and no fruit. That was what we call, trees that are not fruit producing.
Right. No fruit, no flavor.
No fruit.
That was the phrase.
Right. I'm not saying that's the order. I'm just saying these are the three types. Then there's one where the bark is bark, right? It doesn't have any flavor to it, and produces fruit, which is really what Hashem wanted all along, right? And what do you call it? And to show its chachma, it also produced trees that where the bark had no flavor, the fruit did have flavor.
No, now you're up to the one where the bark and the fruit both
had flavor. Oh, both bark and the fruit both had flavor, which is what Hashem really wanted all along. Right? All along. But it was overly zealous, right? Zealous in showing its chachma. Now, in the process over here, what it wound up doing is, you can't see the force of the trees, because what Hashem wanted to create, what Hashem wanted the earth to produce, was something which was totally good for man. Both the bark and the fruit. Both were delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Both sweet. In its interest in trying to be, to show its chachma, right, the chachma that Hashem implanted in it, it wound up undoing Hashem's will, because he created some types of trees where the bark and the fruit had the same flavor, some types of trees where the bark and the fruit did not have the bark had no flavor, and some types of trees didn't produce any fruit altogether. So in its attempt to do what it considered the will, in its reasons to do the will, it lost the Ratzon of Hashem. The Ratzon of Hashem is to show how much he's giving us, right? And instead, by being too confabulated over here, it wound up producing a scenario where it looks like Hashem is denying us certain things, right? Because some of the trees have either got no flavor whatsoever, no fruit whatsoever, and even the ones that do have fruit, most of them, what do you call it, the fruit and the bark doesn't have any flavor. This itself, right, and this required this. There's a proof to this. If you look in the Medrash underneath the Or HaChaim there, it says Lama Niskala. Why was the earth cursed? So it says Rav Yehuda Rav Shalom, or Rav Pinchas. Oh, it's Rav Yehuda Bar Shalom, not Rav Shalom. Okay, Rav Yehuda Bar Shalom, Rav Pinchas, Rav Yehuda Bar Shalom. Amar she'avra al tzivui shekach amar lo Hakadosh Baruch Hu tad she'arz. Why was the earth cursed? Because it went against the tzivui of Hashem, which we already tried to explain. That
what was the earth cursed?
When autumn was cursed, what he called the earth is also cursed. It's going to produce what he called produced with thorns and thistles, right? So et cetera. So the earth was cursed because it didn't fulfill the tzivui of Hashem, which the Or HaChaim said the pshat was not that it rebelled against Hashem. It just, in its attempt to show the chokhmah that was embedded inside of it, it wound up negating the rotzon of Hashem. Yeah. How so? What?
The horror, the same kind of process as the fate of Eitel Dantz itself, it seems to me. That he's trying to be, too smart.
Okay, an echanami. Let's see. Let's see. So nobody quotes the first opinion says it was cursed because it rebelled against it didn't do the will of Hashem. The Medrash doesn't explain why. Okay, Repinchas Amar Afosifu al Tzivui Samcha Lasos Rotzon Boro Etos Epriya Fili Ilone Strak Asuperos. Al Da'at what he called. So the Medrash says the second opinion is it was Samcha Daito. Not only did it fulfill the will of Hashem, but it even did more than that. Even did more than that. How would it do? You know, there's trees that were meant to be non-fruit producing, produce fruits. Of course, it doesn't remain like that anymore. That's part of the curse afterwards. But certainly, initially, it produced trees that were meant to be non-fruit producing and produced fruits. And that the Medrash refers to as Samcha Daito. It had the steadfastness to think that that's what Hashem would want. And in the Yerushalmi, the Nusach is Samcha Daito, what do you call it? Samcha. It rejoiced. It did the will of Besimcha of Hashem. In other words, the second opinion is explaining, is really presenting a situation of where the earth shouldn't have been cursed. It shouldn't have been cursed. And the only reason it was cursed is because since Adam was cursed, and the earth was the source of what he called of Adam, he was created from the earth. So just like what he called when a person is a terrible person walks the face of the earth, you say may the what he called the bosoms that suckled him when he was born, when he was created, that brought him into the world, may it also be cursed. Not that it did anything wrong. It's just that's the way you do. You what he called you damn your parents for bringing you into the world. So therefore, the earth really didn't do anything bad, but it was cursed because it was the source of man. But you see from there. From the second opinion, that what he called it wanted to show we rejoicing that this is what Hashem wanted. It did even more to show how Hashem wants to give to us. Right? So therefore, instead of the first opinion that when it didn't do the will of Hashem, it's because it created a scenario of where it looked like Hashem didn't want to give all of us the best. Right? You know, some yes, some no, what do you call it, but not the full thing which Hashem really wanted, was that all trees, the tree itself should be as delicious as the fruit. This lent itself to recall to the attack of the Nachash. Because that whole attack of the Nachash was, God is denying you. He's denying you. The reason he doesn't want you to eat from the Eitz Hadas is he knows in the day that you'll eat from the Eitz Hadas, you'll be just like him. And that's the fundamental undermining the basic concept of Hakaras HaTov, of appreciation to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right, is the undermining of man's own connection with the Creator, and now that it undermines his entire destiny, all of the hope and all of the good that's in store for man is undermined by eroding his Hakaras HaTov to Hashem. Right? So again, so the scenario, in other words, the scenario, that's what the Or HaChaim HaKadosh says, that's essentially the scenario that was set up by the earth being too clever. By the earth being too clever. Why? Well, you can understand and see with this, you can understand and see with that, you can understand this way. But in the process, the forest was lost for the trees. In other words, by your trying to be overly clever in terms of what you think Hashem is trying to tell you, you forgot the principle, which is you should walk away with the understanding that Hashem is always wants to give you the best. And by creating a possibility, by creating a loophole, by creating a flaw, or what appears to be a flaw, in other words, no, it doesn't always want to give you the best. He doesn't want to always give the best. That leaves room for the satan, for the Yetzirah, to climb in and mess you over. So that's what he called. That essentially is the approach of the Or HaChaim. That's the approach of the Or HaChaim. That's the approach of the Or HaChaim.
So what do you think about that?
What do I think about it? I think that's very true. Okay. You know, you mentioned something that's interesting. It's very interesting. The Sefer HaChinuch, right? The Sefer HaChinuch tells us two fundamental things. He says, first of all, This actually will come to play in just a moment also as well. He says, Judaism can't be just intellectual. It can't be just ideas. Mm-hmm. He says, because achrei ha'pu'ulos nimshachem alevavos, the deeds that a person does draw his heart after those deeds. In other words, we know the Chazal teaches, Rachmana Libaboy, Hashem wants our hearts. Hashem wants our hearts. But the only way that we can give our hearts to Hashem is if we catch our hearts, is we're in a pincer move between our heads and our bodies. What do I mean? Mm-hmm. If you don't know what's right or what's wrong, you can't become a tzaddik, right? Ein amar tzchased v'lo bur yirechet. You don't know. There's nobody go. Well, how am I supposed to know what I'm supposed to do? How can you give your heart to Hashem if you don't know how to give your heart to Hashem? You can make up any sort of story. You can say, I got to hop up and down on one foot, insert my right index finger in my left nostril, what do you call it, and paint my hair green and chartreuse, and wear an earring, what do you call it, in several parts of my ear attached to what do you call it, to a navel button as well, right, with a clanging chain on the side, and says, this is what the Lord wants. Right? Who knows? Who knows? You can make up anything. You can make up anything. Ein amar tzchosiv lo bur yechid. You don't know. You can't do anything. But achrei ha'pu'ulos, says the Sefer HaChinuch, nimshachem levavos. Achrei ha'pu'ulos nimshachem levavos. If you don't do, then all the knowledge will be lost because in order to get your heart, you need to. That's the way Kadosh Baruch Hu created the world. You need to do in the world. You need to do in the world. If the truth is, when you think about it, I think Sasemis says it. We say in davening on Shabbos, "Kadshenu b'mitzvah secha, v'sein chalkenu b'sora secha." Sanctify us through your mitzvahs, right? And v'sein chalkenu b'sora secha, give us our portion in your Torah. And you think about it, it should be the other way around, right? Well, it should be the other way around. If I don't know the Torah, I can't do the mitzvahs, which is true. But the fact that it put it out of order. Right, kachenu mitzvah secha, v'seichel kenu mitzvah secha. So the Sfasemis is because through the kedushas of mitzvos, through doing the mitzvos, that's where a person really locks onto it and it becomes part of him, the Torah that he learns. He finds his chelik in the Torah. He finds his true identity in the Torah. But if a person just thinks it's all intellectuals, you know, just floating around airy fairy in the head, and I don't have to follow through on it indeed, then it's kaputsky. So that's what he calls, that's a point. Comes along the Sefer HaChinuch, and when he talks about Shabbos, he talks about the certain fundamentals about Shabbos, right, about keeping Shabbos. He says, one fundamental of Shabbos is you have to realize that Hashem created the world. Yesh me'ayin. When you keep Shabbos, you're testifying to the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, right, as the ex nihilo, whatever, right, what do you call it? He created from nothingness. He created from nothingness. Why is that important? Why is that important? Because it makes you, first of all, the two fundamental things that come out of that. First of all, you know, right, that the world is a gift. And you're appreciative to Hashem. Right? The world's not a given. It's a gift. It's a gift. He wills, therefore we be. So that's why it's so important to believe that Hashem created the world out of nothing. It's a gift. Everything is a gift. Existence is a gift. Our identity, our hope, our destiny, our being is a gift. In addition, though, he says that we also talk on Shabbos about Zeichel Yetzias Mitzrayim. Why? So you can say a lot of deep things about that. We see Hashem is involved in our lives, da 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 da. Says Achinuch, very simple. When we were slaves, our time was not our own. And when Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, right, took us out of Mitzrayim, he would call, now we have an opportunity to rest. Very pashut, very simple. Why? Because that fosters hakaras hatov. That fosters recognizing that Hashem is doing us what he called good. We spend too much energy, right? I spend too much energy, right? Trying to figure out, okay, Hashem, you know, this is a problem, that's a problem, but okay, I'll accept it, or I'll work with it, I'll struggle, it's very cool. It always becomes such a struggle for us, because we're not starting from a ground zero point of being deliriously happy and thankful for what Hashem gave us, right? We assume, Magili, everything should be right, and therefore, my questions all begin with, what about the stuff that's not right? But if a person were deliriously happy and thankful about what he got, right? So then we recall that a lot of his questions fall away, or they certainly don't have the same magnitude as they had before him. So same thing also over here.
It's either that or you get depressed.
Right, okay, yeah, okay. Nachon, 100%. That's our problem. We either get angry or we get depressed. Sometimes we get both. Right? For those that are Zohar, that's Deshul Chanos. Right? We get angry and depressed. But the fact is that exactly is the scenario over here that was being set up by the earth being too clever, right? In terms of trying to fulfill every possibility, every permutation of a way you could have instead, even though not going the simple way, but I can this one and that one and the next one, etc., etc., it wound up detracting from an atmosphere, right, that would have fostered greater Hakaras HaTov to Hashem. And that laid the path, that laid the foundation for the Satan to come in and say, you know why he's not giving this to you? He doesn't want you to eat from this. It's because he's trying to deny you. He's trying to keep you from reaching greater heights. He knows that you'll become like him if you eat from the Eitz HaDaas. And that was part of the issue, is that, well, let's see what the Or HaChaim says.
Page
now? No, we're still in the first. But don't worry, we're still synopsizing. Uh-huh. Don't worry.
So what
are you
telling us now?
So the time, Adam, Shelo Amar Lo L'Chava. Adam never told Chava that it was usher to eat from the tree. To eat from what do you call from the tree itself. Because again, when Hashem told Adam, don't eat from the Eitz HaDaas, he didn't mean just don't eat from the fruits of the Eitz HaDaas. He said, don't eat from the tree either. Don't eat from the bark, because the one tree, or perhaps what it called, the Eitz HaDaas was a tree where actually the bark and the fruit tasted the same. Right? All the other ones either produced no fruit at all, right? Or they produced fruit, but the bark wasn't as sweet as what he called as the fruit, right? But the Eitz HaDaas, the bark and the fruit were the same. And Hashem told Adam, don't eat from this.
Chava knew.
Adam never told her not to eat from the bark.
She knew.
She knew.
She knew because the snake said, you know, when she was having a conversation with the snake, she said, we were told not to eat this.
Yeah, you've begun. Again, she thought that she shouldn't eat from the fruit. She added on to also don't touch the tree, which was never said to her. Okay, right. That's a separate issue. But okay, but she thought not to eat from the fruit, but she didn't know. Look what he says.
Not to eat the bark.
Right, to eat the bark. But Tom Adam Shlo Amar Lo L'Chava, why didn't he tell her that?
And that's what the snake gave her, the bark?
Oh, so we'll see. So what do you call the Tom Adam Shlo Amar Lo L'Chava? V'lo yoda ki ha'oyev v'cheder gam lo chash lo mer lo isra eitz. Why didn't he tell her that it was easier to eat from the tree? V'chash lo ki ain't tam be'eitz. Adam didn't realize, right? He didn't realize because all the other trees, there was no taste in the bark. There was no taste in the bark. Right? So he assumed that the Eitz HaDaas was also like that. He didn't know, says the Or HaChaim, that the bark and the fruit were the same flavor, what he called it in the Eitz HaDaas. So why should I tell him not to eat from the bark? Why would you eat from the bark anyway? And even Hashem told him, don't eat from the Eitz HaDaas, right? Don't eat from the Eitz HaDaas, which implies don't eat anything from the Eitz HaDaas, not the fruit, not the bark. He thought Hashem was not being exact when he said that. Because all the other trees that we sold he could eat from, the bark didn't taste like anything. She figured that's the same thing also with Eitz HaDaas. So he didn't bother telling her, right? So he wasn't being careful, he wasn't being medaktik in the exact same way Hashem said, don't eat from the tree. He said, it doesn't mean to me don't eat from the tree. It means don't eat from the fruits. Because why would you eat from the tree anyway? Now the other trees, is there any reason to eat the bark? Ke'etz kvar hisig mishari lonos. Ke'ein botam v'lo tovo alav. So it comes out that the earth in its eagerness to show how understanding it was, and to try and cover all the permutations, created a scenario, right? Created a scenario on the one hand, yeah, like we said before, where the world doesn't look like Hashem is trying to give you everything.
That's how the tree was complacent.
That's how the earth is what he called is also responsible. And for Adam, it created a scenario where he began to think that Hashem didn't mean exactly what he said. He mean, don't eat from the fruit. Why would you eat from the bark? The bark doesn't taste like anything in this, because his only experience was that the bark didn't taste like anything. Little did he know that the Eitz HaDaas was not that way. Further, says the Orach Chaim HaKadosh, at the bottom of page 1, the Adam ki Omar shamata be kol ishtecha va tochum in eitz asher tivisicha lemor lo sulchal vimenu arur adama bo vorecha ve itzun tochlena ko yemei chayecha, says the Orach Chaim HaKadosh. Why does he punish Adam? He doesn't say because he ate from the fruit. He doesn't eat from the Eitz HaDaas. He says, you know why he punished you? Ki shamata le kol ishtecha, because you listened to your wife.
He got punished because he listened to his wife?
Listen to his wife. Stay calm. Let me finish.
Too late. You're in trouble now, buddy. He listened to his wife.
Stay. What do you mean he listened to his wife? He listened to his wife. In other words, says the Orach Chaim, Adam didn't realize he was eating from the Eitz HaDaas.
Wow.
He didn't realize he was eating. She gave him a fruit.
Yeah.
She gave him a fruit, but he didn't realize it was the Eitz HaDaas. But his problem was, he should have asked, where's this from? And if you're interested, if you're concerned, now we'll bring up another issue here. If you're really concerned with doing Hashem's will, so be careful what you do. Don't just really go, just assume it's fine. Yeah, it's like somebody hands you some food to eat. So you ask him, well, does it have hashgacha? They say, well, yeah, what do you care? It's got the hashgacha of the Rabbanut of Umal Facham. Right? Somebody calls and says, oh, yeah, it's got Rabbanut of Umal Facham. And you think after you eat it, well, Umal Facham is an Arab town in the Galil. They don't have Rabbanut there, etc. Right?
I don't know. He said, you know, I don't know what he's saying. What he's doing. Adam said, you know, why are you giving me? You gave me the tree of thoughts when Hashem said that. He knew he was eating the tree of thoughts.
If you look at the Chumash, says the Orach Chaim, he's Adam Amar. Why are you being cursed? Ki shamata kol ishtecha, v'tochom in eitz asher tivisicha. The point is what he calls that you ate from the fruit, not that you listened to your wife. What would you have to do listening to your wife? You ate from the fruit I told you not to eat from.
So he knew.
It says he ate from it. Ate from it. But he says the issue is because you didn't check into it. You weren't being careful with your fulfillment of what he called of your requirements, was to do the will of Hashem. So says what he called, says the Orach Chaim. Right? He says, take and eat. So he ate. The kitzer. So what happens over here is that and recall the Orach Chaim. I don't want to go into a long story. This is how the snake. We're in Perek Gimel Pasuk Yud Zion. Right? The Orach Chaim basically says that's how the snake was able to bamboozle Chava. Because he brought her, recall, first of all, she added on, she said, you can't touch the tree. He pushed her into the tree. She saw nothing happened. Okay. Right? And then when she was close to the tree, she saw there was something special about the tree. Something special about the tree, about the bark itself. Right? About the bark itself. And she tasted it. And what do you call it? Because she was enticed by it. Why is this bark different from every other bark? And she ate from it. So all of the errors of the being overly clever of the Adama to produce different types of trees, as opposed to create a scenario of where everything that Hashem gave was this perfectly good, right, and pleasant for man, the bark of all trees and all fruits the same, created a scenario within which Chava made a mistake. And then, what do you call it? And then Adam made a mistake.
He didn't know that he was eating
it. Right. He made a mistake. So this is the Arachaim HaKadosh.
She gave also to her husband.
Right. That's what it says. Right. Right.
She took the fruit.
Of course, he knew he was eating a fruit. He didn't know the fruit was the other fruit. The
woman perceived that the tree was good.
Okay, the translating is not going to do anything over here.
Okay. He gave it to her husband.
Okay. So now what? Why wasn't Adam more careful? Why wasn't he more careful? And it's just exactly what the Arachaim HaKadosh says. Why was he more careful?
I guess he assumed that his wife wouldn't give him something else also.
All right. The question is what he called maybe his wife didn't know something, but he called her, so he would just check it out. It's not that he has to be suspicious of her, right? But let's what he called. But after all, you mean, you know, you just have to have to show a little bit of care, right? A little bit of care of what you're doing. So here the Divrei Chaim, Reb Chaim Tzanzer, says is a very fascinating thing. He says that Adam, right, thought the most important thing was understanding. He didn't realize what? Right?
Before he ate the tree.
He thought the most important thing was understanding. And that the world of deeds was not so important. Right? Understanding was the most important thing. He comes to explain this based upon the pasuk in Perek Gimel pasuk Zayin. Vatipachna eine shnehem, vayedu ki erumim hem. Their eyes were opened and they knew that they were naked. Vayisperu alei seina, vayasu lehem chagoros. Their eyes were opened and they knew that they were naked. So it's here that the Mor Nebuchim asked the question, right? What? It's weird that the Mor Nebuchim asked the question. It seems like you're rewarded. Before they didn't know, and now they do know. So the Mor Nebuchim answers the question. No, this level of knowledge is not a mila, right? Because in other words, before Adam ate from the Eitz Hadas, his world comprised of truth and falsehood. What was true was, and what was false wasn't, right? Now we enter into the world of fantasy. What's pleasant and what's not pleasant. Pleasant and not pleasant are all relative terms. And those only exist after you've been submerged into a world of fantasy. Right? But really, the real world is the world of truth and non-truth. And so their understanding of here is not a reward. It is what he called, it is a description of their perception of the world post their submersion into a lower level of existence.
So what did he do with it?
Nothing to do with it. That's the reality. That's what we became. That's where our life is. So it's not a reward that they knew more now. Their way of knowing things now, what's good and what's not good, what's pleasant and not pleasant, is a function of being submerged into a world of fantasy. Fantasy, in other words, what's pleasant and what's not pleasant.
Physicality.
What's pleasant and what's not pleasant. Right? What's pleasant and what's not pleasant. Right? That's what he called that's not an issue. The issue is, because what's a matter of pleasant? Pleasant is what's doing for me. That means that a person's universe is revolving around him. If it's a question of what's pleasant and what's not pleasant for me, whatever it happens to be, it doesn't mean what you consider as being pleasant or not, whether it's desire or whether it's power, whether you're into Freud or whether into Adler, it doesn't make any difference. It's all revolves around what about me? It's all about me. It's all about myself and I. It's all about egocentricity. That's a false world. Because there is no egocentric. There's no egocentric world. You're a creation. We're a creation, right? There's only a God-centric world. In that world, what he called the decision shouldn't be built upon what's pleasant for me, what's pleasant for me. It should be built upon what is and what isn't. So essentially, when I'm plunged into a world where my first question is, what's in it for me, right? Be it power or pleasure, right? Be it power or pleasure. What I've done is, I've put myself into a world that doesn't exist. Well, it's a very elaborate mirage.
I don't know, he existed, but he just went the other way.
It's not real. It's only there. The reason we don't disappear is because Hashem wants us to, what do you call it, to have Bechira. And because Hashem created the concept of tshuva, in other words, you can re-extract yourself from that world that's false and put yourself into the real world, right? But otherwise, it doesn't exist. It's a dream. Dreams are not real. When we experience them, we think they're very real. But we wake up and realize they're not real. And that's why that and a world of egocentricity is kichalom ya'uf. It's like a dream that disappears. It's a mirage. A very elaborate mirage, but it's a mirage nonetheless. So that's the way Mordechai Buchim explains it.
But he's saying that he went to a false world, and that false world is a mirage.
That is a false world, a dream. That it's not a dream.
It's
not a dream. It's what he called a dream. But it's a false world, and therefore his knowledge now of what's pleasant or what's not pleasant, right, etc., what's good and what's not good, is what he calls all based upon what's in it for me, and that is a world of fantasy. Because the world is not about what he calls what's in it for what he calls for me. If the world's revolving around you, that's true. But the world isn't revolving around you. You're revolving around the creator. So that knowledge is not a mila. It's not a plus. It's a deficiency. But says the what he calls says the the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, not the Or HaChaim, the different Chaim. Recall Reb Chaim Tzanzer. He says that based upon brings the number of Zohars, etc. He says showing that what Adam, when it says that they realized they were naked, means they realized that they hadn't clothed themselves with deeds. In other words, he goes into a very interesting discussion. A soul, right, doesn't experience. A soul is pure, like we say every morning. Elokai neshama shenasata bi tahorihi, right? The soul doesn't experience pain, right? The soul is pure. In order for the soul to experience either pleasure or pain, it needs a levush. It needs what do you call it? It needs to be dressed in something. In this world, the soul experiences in this world because we have a goof. We have a body, right? When we die, right, at 120, that's when we die. So then the body goes to the ground. And now how does the soul experience either pleasure or pain? So instead, he brings in the Zohar that it always needs a beged. It always needs a levush. So the levush is formed either by the mitzvos that we do in a positive sense, right? The mitzvos that we do become the clothing of the soul, and that's how it experiences pleasure in the lower Gan Eden. The kavanas that we have when we did those mitzvos clothe the soul in a higher level, and that's how we experience the pleasure, how the soul experiences the pleasure of upper Gan Eden, right? Again, I don't remember either, right? But there's a lower Gan Eden and upper Gan Eden. Lower Gan Eden, we call it the clothing of the soul of the midst of themselves. And the upper Gan Eden. The upper Gan Eden. The upper Gan Eden is really called is where a higher level. And there, the clothing of the soul are the good intentions that were attached to those mitzvot and mitzvot that we did. Pain in Gehenna also requires a levush because the soul doesn't experience the pain. The soul is pure. How does it experience it's dressed in the clothing of our angers and our jealousies? That's what he says. And that's how it experiences what he called experiences. Very interesting. So when it says that Adam realized that he was naked, he realized that he had made a mistake. He realized that it wasn't enough just to soar in ideas. That his existence in this world required his being very careful in acts, because that's how he clothes his soul. And because he wasn't so careful with those acts, that's perhaps why he never told Chava some of the things. He wasn't so careful. He said, oh, here's the food, okay, eat it. He disassociated the world of acts from what we call being as important as it was. Just like we said, the only way that we can have a proper attachment to our Torah is not through only intellectual things, but through a commitment to actually being meticulous in our observance of the mitzvahs. Not crazy, but meticulous. meticulous. And that was a mistake. That was the biggest mistake. That was the biggest mistake.
I should have asked what it was.
Right? If he'd been, as it were, thinking in terms of how crucial, right, the acts were, right? And that's the way Hashem designed the world. And that was his error. Okay.
Same with her.
Yeah. Again, same thing. Okay, further. Right, another nakuda here. We see with regard to the sun and the moon, right? So this is a limud, right? This is a limud for us. This is not just, you know, let's see what happened to Adam HaRishon. Let's see what happened to Adam HaRishon, you know, in Parshas Bereishis. This is something for us. This is something for us. The first, I think, the two lessons we walk away with is one of the lessons of the Orach Chaim, which is, make sure that you don't lose your sense of appreciation of Hashem's caring for you and Hashem's really cool. Again, that doesn't mean to make everything airy-fairy, right? You got to do the mitzvos. You have to do the mitzvos. You need the balance, on the one hand, of knowing that you have to do the mitzvos, which the different Chaim taught us, right? It's not just have intellectual ideas and then let your deeds, your actions, do whatever you want, right, etc. That's a crucial thing for us. And the other crucial thing is though, you have to make sure that when you're doing the deeds, make sure that you're doing the deeds is not causing you to create, to be bent out of shape in your relationship with Hashem. Like sometimes you find a person, you know, a person, he bites off, he thinks he can do more than he really can do. Let's say in terms of precious or chassidus. You come into the room, there's a person there staring at a piece of chocolate cake, right? And they're not eating it. They're not eating it. So for one person not eating it, he's on a spiritual high. I'm afraid it's going to detract from my connection to Hashem. Again, that's a person who's a chassid.
Yeah, meanwhile,
that's a chassid, right? But sometimes, what he called it, you can have a person who, as it were, who is not eating it, and you say to him, you know, listen, can I, Barton, leave me alone? Don't you see I'm not eating chocolate cake? You're probably not even sensitive to that. You're a spiritual amoeba, right? That person obviously has missed the forest for the trees, right? His again, for another person, it's an act of unbelievable avodas Hashem, of chassidus, of precious. So those are the two main lessons I think that we learned from both the Orach Chaim and the Divrei Chaim here in terms of our connection with mitzvos. Next, is the story of the sun and the moon. Because Baruch Hu says, let there be ma'oros ha'gedolim, right? Yehi ma'oros barakiyah shemaim, etc. Right, it says, Vayas elokim, here, Pasuk Tazayim, Vayas elokim ishneh ma'oros ha'gedolim, es ha'or ha'gedolim shel sayom, es ha'or ha'katonim shel salayla, ve'es ha'kocho ha'kocho. The two ma'oros, right, yehi, let there be two ma'oros. So Rashi says, "Ma'oros hagdolim shavim nivru v'nismat alavana al shekitrug of amar iets l'shnei melachim shishtamshu bekeser echad." What's the story over here? Right? Hashem says, "Let there be two great lights." The moon says, "You can't have two lights, record two kings using the same crown." Hashem says, "Fine, so make yourself smaller." And then all of a sudden, in order to appease the moon, right, he says, "Okay, I'll give you the kochavim also." Says the Mor Vashamish, right over here. The Mor Vashamish, once again, one of the great Hasidic masters, a Talmud of Rav Lemelech Lezhinsk, Rav in Krakow. He's buried there. He says Venira biuro in the second line of the paragraph there. Venira biuro bekitzer lefisha kodesh baruch hu shil sholomas mata mata ad makom shi efshari la adam lachzor acha kol ha'maisim shis atzik ba'ol mazel avol l'tshuva, right? Because Baruch Hu created a world, a physical world, right? His presence is here, but it's very hidden. It's very hidden. The ilu haya mishtal sha'olam ba'ovios v'gashmi yosyosir ma'at le'efshari klal lachzor b'tshuva achakach. V'zeh sha'omer l'olam odai. He says a very interesting thing. We know that that the name of Sha followed by Dai, Shakai, right? Sha'omer l'olam odai. And Chazal say, and there are different ways to understand it, because I'll say that the parish, Omer Lalomodai, right, is that it was like you, a loom, right? A weaver is weaving an immense piece of cloth, and he's keeping on expanding and expanding and expanding, and he says, "Die, enough, no more." So the two approaches to this, the more Shamesh, what he called, I think the Kliyokar also, what he called, once the earlier Mepharshim say, the idea is the world is becoming more physical, more physical, more physical, more physical, more physical. Hashem says, no, too much. Stop. Don't be too much. That's the way he's going with it. Again, there's another completely opposite way of doing it, but that's the way he says it.
So Hashem's presence is hidden.
So Hashem's presence, but it can't be too hidden, because then we'll never find it. Right? The beginning. Two great lights. The light of the sun, which is the light of Hashpa. Right? Kadosh Baruch Hu Kol Yachol is like the sun. Not that God forbid the sun is what we worship. Hashem is like the sun. He's Mashpia. Our job is to be like the moon, to reflect his hashva, to reflect the connection from him, right? But Amr Levani, I efshir l'shnei ha-malachim sh'ishtam shum keser echad, t'anish yi ha-behiruz godol me'od, v'ayin yezei batla ha-behira. If the moon and the sun are going to be on the same par, if, as it were, they're going to share a crown, right? Albeit one is the one who's giving the light, the other one is reflecting the light. But if they're so connected to one another, right? They're so connected to one another. They're so clearly connected to one another, then we have no Bechira. It's too clear. We can't be so close to Hashem. I'm getting calculated to the pasuk it said earlier. It says, Yehi, let there be, it's singular. Not Yehu. Yehi, let there be, singular. So attached. How will we get reward for anything like that if it's all too clear? So Hashem says, okay, fine, make yourself smaller. So then the moon got worried. Wait a second, but then maybe too difficult.
What did the moon say?
The moon said, if we're sharing the same crown, in other words, creation, is so clearly reflecting the light of the Creator, that his presence is so clear, there's nothing to get reward for. It's too clear. If we're so attached. And not that we're the same. The sun is clearly the one who's the source of the light. The moon is clearly the reflector of the light. But if it's so clear that you can use one verb, the verb in singular, yehi, not yehu, yehi, let there be, right? So then it's too clear. To which, when he called, Hashem says, fine, so make yourself smaller. To which the moon says, but wait a second. If I'm so much smaller, in other words, if the gap between the Creator and his creation is too much, what if it gets too dark? What if it gets too thick? What if I'll never be able to find my way out of this? To which Hashem says, I'll give you the Kochavim. Kochavim. Just like the Kochavim, right? Chazal say, what he calls the Kochavim are a symbol to the Tzadikim. In other words, what he calls, there are certain time periods of Kedusha, Shabbos, Yomim Tovim. There are people, individuals, who are great tzaddikim. And even when times are very dark, we turn to those times, either of what we call of Yomim Tovim, of Shabbos, with the unique presence of Hashem there, or we turn to unique people who are clearly very attached, and that becomes our safety line. We draw ourselves up out of the muck, out of the physicality. So that is the discussion over here. The moon was not doing something wrong. It was just concerned. What's the nature of the avoda? If it's so clear, then there's nothing to receive reward for. Hashem says, fine, to make yourself small. And the moon is scared. But wait a second. What if the gap between the Creator and his creation is too thick, too heavy, non-penetrable, then we'll never find our ways out. Hashem said, don't worry, I give you the kochavim. Just like at night, even when the moon is not visible.
What are we supposed to get from the stars?
Just like in the night, what he called, even when the moon is not visible, a new moon, you don't see the moon at all. But the stars can tell you a direction. So too, says the Gemara.
What direction are the stars going to tell us?
You navigate with the stars. How do all the sailors over a zillion years, what do you call they navigate, right? The stars tell you how to navigate. So too also, that's the Gemara, he quotes the Gemara in Chulin, that they would quote that the tzaddikim are like stars, that we will always have, even in the most difficult times, when there seems to be such a gap between the clarity of the Creator and where creation is holding, right? Don't think you've been placed into a situation which is irretrievable. It's not true, because there always will be kochavim. There always be times of Kedusha, and there will be even people of Kedusha to whom you can pull yourself in, just like climbing onto a life raft. This is okay.
You want to drink water?
No, it's okay. Let's just do two more things briefly. We call Cain and Hevel. Cain initiated, Hevel followed. Okay, fine. Cain and Hevel, right? Cain initiated, he was the first one to bring Corbin, and Hevel, we call, came afterwards. We asked the question before, if Cain wanted to bring Corbin, why did he bring junk? Says what he calls, says the Maral, says the Gurayi, he didn't bring junk. He brought what he thought was what encapsulated what his avoda was. He worked the earth. The earth was cursed. He therefore bought from something that typified the earth, because he wanted to strengthen his position. Right? He was a worker of the earth. The earth was cursed already from the time of avoda. He brought something cursed because he says, this is my avoda. This is what I'm about. He wanted to strengthen his position in the earth against Hevel. Hevel was involved with the parts of the earth that were pleasant, that were good, the sheep that produces both milk and wool, right, etc., right, all the pleasant things. Hevel was involved in that. Cain was involved in working the earth. The earth was cursed. He brought something cursed, he said, because he wanted to strengthen his position. What?
But say, so what did he bring? He brought wheat. That's all
right. He didn't bring wheat. He brought flax. Right? He brought flax. But the idea is he brought stuff that wasn't rich and good, etc. Because that's not my part of the world. He had a bad eye. Right? But that's my lot in the world. He wanted to strengthen himself against Hevel. Hevel had one form of voting, he had another form of voting. But both of them, neither of them, I should say, was interested in showing, what do you call it, in giving nachas ruach, giving satisfaction to Hashem. Each one was trying to strengthen his own position. Right?
Each one?
Each one. Yeah. Even Hevel also. Hevel, when he brought the, what he called the sheep, is because he wanted to strengthen his position against Cain.
Cain wanted more flax?
Cain was involved in the earth, which was a cursed place. So fine. So let me, I'm the master of it. It's cursed, but I'm the master of it. I want to be top of the pyramid. That's what he brought in order to strengthen his position against Hevel. And Hevel did the exact same thing, not because he was trying to show greater obedience to Hashem, right? He was really quite trying to strengthen his position, right? His position vis-a-vis Cain. I can't breathe if it's really cold. Like what?
It's open the window.
The window's open. If I turn on the air conditioning, you'll turn it off.
I put my sweater on.
Oh, forget it. What do you call it? What do you call it? What do you call it? So now, yeah. So because both of them were self-serving, their avoda was flawed.
But both of them, Hashem took Hevel.
He took it because Hevel at least was something that was good. But since his intention, right, even when he bought something that was good, but because his intention was to strengthen his position, that's why Cain was able to kill him. Otherwise, his Corbin should have protected him, because he was self-serving. There's a flaw. And in other words, once again, there's another lesson here in terms of our avoda. If we're not thinking in terms of what's bringing Rico last, like we say, Lassos, Nachas, Nachas, Ruach, Lassos, Nachas, Ruach, Boris, Bokshbo, we want to give Nachas, Rico, we want to fulfill Hashem's will. Now we want to come up on top of the pyramid. So these are all different aspects of Avoda where the people made errors. The earth, Adam, Chava, right? The moon, I don't know if you could call it an error, but the moon was what he called, we needed, you know, needed some tikkun, Cain and Hevel, and finally the last thing is the nephilim.
That's a nice Yiddish.
The nephilim. The nephilim the Nephilim, these were angels, right? And I'm just going to read you a medrash. Right, on page 3.
All right.
Shol Talmid of the Rav Yosef, Mal Azoel. In other words, the names of these two, what do you call them, these two angels, the Nephilim, those who fell and caused others to fall, right, were Shem Chazai and, what do you call it, and Azoel. Shol Talmid of the Rav Yosef, Mal Azoel, Omelhem. Kevin Sha'amdu Dora Mabul, Va'avdu Avodah Zarah. Once the generation of the flood began to be over Avodah Zarah. Hayah Kodesh Baruch Hu Mis'atzev. Right? And Kaviyachal Kodesh Baruch Hu was what we call a state of constriction, of sadness over this. Again.
Who's that?
So once mankind was going off the D, right? So Kaviyachal Kodesh Baruch Hu was being Mis'atzev. Mis'atzev is really called literally sadness. But what it means, in other words, Kodesh Baruch Hu is his connection to the world is becoming constricted, etc. Because man is not connecting to Hashem. Miyad amdu shnei malachim, two angels, Shem Chazai and Azoel, two angels said, "Va'amru lefanu Ribono Shel Olam, halo amarnu kishabaratas ha'ol alamcha, ma'enosh kisizkerenu." When you created the world, we said, "What's man that you should mention him? He's going to mess up."
Oh, we told you so.
Right? We told you so. Okay. Right? Why did you create him in the first place? Amalhem. V'olam ma yelov. What will be with the world? What do you call it? Man. What do you call it? I wanted a world of creation. Said the Malachim Amru Ribono Shel Olam, Hayu Mistapkim Bo. If we were in the world, said the Malachim, then we would deal with it properly. We'd be satisfied with it. We wouldn't step beyond the boundaries of limitation that you'd set for us. Amalhem Galui V'dula Fonai. I know. Shematem shruim ba'aretz. If you were down on the earth, right? Hayagam b'chem shol yitzhar. Yitzhar would also rule over you, right? These in kashim b'nei adam. Now that you'd be worse than the regular people. Amrulo ten lan rishus. Give us a chance. V'nodur im abrios v'tira echanu mikadshim eshemach. And you'll see how we'll make a kiddush Hashem. Amalem redu v'tadurim on. Fine, go down and dwell with them. Yordu miyad kilkalu im benosa adam shayu yafos lo yachu lichvoshes yitzron. Immediately got involved in taiva, and not only were they bad, but they made everybody else around them worse. Right? Like Rashi says in the parish over here, the feeling al shem shenaflu v'yipilus olam. They fell, right? And they brought the world down along with them. What's the limit over here? Right, well, this is not the Rikos Tama story they tell. The story over here is...
We're greater than the angels?
What? No, I think the story is Al Tamid Batucha Ad Yom Moscha. Right? Don't think, right, that you'll never, what do you call, be Nechshel. What do you call it? Don't assume that. The Malachim thought, what do you call it, they could come down to the earth, right, and not be affected by, what do you call it, by the Koach of the Satan, the Yitzhahara. And they were proved wrong. So another is, what do you call it, this is another again, right, another limud in Avodas Hashem. Just like we saw, in contrast to what we saw in the beginning with regard to the Adama, don't be so clever that in your fulfillment of things, you remove, what do you call it, your sense of gratitude and appreciation and what do you call it, thankfulness to Hashem, because you've constricted yourself out of your own gazoo, that you feel like you're going to blow up in a second, right? Again, you have to fulfill what Hashem wants. But don't bite off more than you can chew, like the proverbial non-eater of the chocolate cake, who's obviously so bent out of shape by not eating the chocolate cake, right? He can't live his life normally. Again, that doesn't mean that intrinsically there's something wrong with being a Porush, or people grow from Precious and Chassidus, but you have to be holding there, etc.
People can grow with...
From Precious and Chassidus, right, called... From resisting, we call things...
Resisting certain things in this world,
but you have to be there. So make sure, what do you call, not to shoot yourself in the leg by making things, what do you call, by forgetting the reason why you're being over at Hashem in the first place. And the other thing, on the other hand, the opposite pole, and that's what we conclude with, is in a feeling, is don't think that you're impervious, what I call, to any temptations, and what you call it, and being willing to put yourself into all sorts of situations which might be very non-conducive to your avodas Hashem. Right? Okay. Stop there.
Go ahead.